Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We're going to do all kinds of stuff. Look back on the year in sports. What were some of our favorite moments from the year in sports as we wind down? This will be our next to last show of the year. So what were some of those moments from this year that we enjoyed? Alamo Bowl is tonight. What's your excitement level? Is the game going to get played? Who is going to play if it gets played? When it gets played? What are some young guys you might want to see? So we'll talk about that. Have some results from yesterday at the birth of Frank Teague. Also bowl games from yesterday. Can we start the chant? SEC. SEC. Now listen.
Just means more.
Already hearing the excuses. Oh, well, you know, not motivated. If it was flipped in 4-0, we'd be hearing how it's the greatest conference of all time. Interesting note about last night's game between Tech and Mississippi State that I can get to. Also, passing of John Madden last night as well at the age of 85. So lots going on here as we round out the year 2021 on the sports calendar. 225-9698. Here's the phone or the text line, 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of that, whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, stay in touch with us a couple of different ways. You can log on to KADSAM.com, or you can download the Paragon app. The app has everything. It's got radio. It's got Penny News, brand new edition of the Penny News at the website last night at midnight, thepennynews.com. It's also got Big Elk TV, Paragon TV. Yeah, Paragon TV last night had the Hammond game. So, still some high school hoops to be able to watch there. Also, Skinny on Sports podcast is available on KADSAM.com or also on iTunes. So, if you missed the show entirely, you can go find us there. See what we had to say about a certain subject. Hello, Jared.
How are you?
Fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm good. I am good. I am happy.
Got any big plans for the game tonight?
Yeah, sit and watch it. That's about it.
That's all.
That's it. Maybe can't decide between hot dogs, brats, or hamburgers. It's going to be some kind of tailgate-themed food. But no, that's it. I mean, then the worst part is that this thing's going to start at 8:15. So what we're looking at, midnight, bedtime?
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah. But I plan on watching it, and you asked earlier about excitement level. I think any day with OU football or OSU football, any state football is better than none. So I'm ready to go. I'm anxious to see the old visor walk the sidelines again, see what kind of how fun he's going to have. It sounds like he's already having fun, ready to get a tequila bath.
Yeah,
I'm my excitement level. I don't know if it's excitement is the word I'd use. I'm looking forward to it. It's kind of like the level below excitement, you know. But hey, it's football.
Yeah, I'm not there.
Not there?
I'm not convinced the game's going to happen, so I'm not going to get all excited to watch something that I don't know that's going to happen anyway, especially with what happened yesterday with UCLA. We'll get to that. Birth of Frank Teague yesterday, we talked about the field that is there, a fantastic field for that tournament down in Ada. First round is complete. 3A, number 3, Perry knocked off Latta, which is 2A, number 3, 48-43. Weatherford topped Hammond 54-39. That's 4A's number 4 against Class B's number 2. So it's Perry and Weatherford in one semifinal tonight at 8. The other semifinal will pit a pair of number 1 teams. It's Class B number 1, Lomega, knocked off 2A, number 2, Amber Pocass at 56-52. Then Tuttle hammered Frontier, 4A's number 1. Beat Class A's number 11, 58-31. So Lomega Tuttle is the first semifinal at 6:30 on the other side of that bracket. At 3 o'clock, the things get going with Ampo and Frontier. 4:30 for Latta and Hammond. I did not get a chance to watch any of the Hammond and Weatherford game. I was at a birthday party, and it was not on the screen. But looking at the score, we talked about it yesterday.
What was on the screen?
Football.
Wasn't The Bachelor or anything?
The Shrek, actually, at one point, was on one of the screens where I was at.
Sure, yeah. Drives me crazy. Okay, anyways, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I did watch.
What did you think?
Bad start for Hammond. And they couldn't get out of the hole. There's good things that happened, and it's clearly why they're a top team in Class B. But Weatherford's pretty dang good, too.
Weatherford's good.
Weatherford's real good.
They're athletic at the guard position.
As athletic as they get, yes. It just came out just a bad start, and Hammond would get it within 12, I think it was within 10 at one point. They just could not. Every time Hammond had a little bit of a spark, Weatherford would have an answer. So, but, that's okay. I mean, that's a good team versus a good team.
Well, and it shows you as we get down throughout the playoffs, I mean, you notice how fast those games go. Like, you look up and it's like, oh, my gosh, the fourth quarter is starting. Just watching. You know what I mean? It's amazing how fast they go.
You can't catch – that's the thing. I mean, as soon as I saw my watch say 6:30, I go, oh, my goodness, because – by the time I had to drop what I was doing and turn it on, so because that's how fast. And you don't realize how fast high school games can go.
Well, and the point of that is 2 minutes of bad play ruin your season.
Yeah.
End your season in ways that you don't want it to end.
That's why the state tournament is so awesome.
It is. And every possession matters so much more when you get down toward the end. And this is just a good – kind of a good lesson to learn. Like, hey, when you're coming out against good, you got to be ready to go. You can't dig yourself a 15-point hole and expect to climb out of it against good teams because the game just ends. You know, especially with no shot clock, so it doesn't force teams to get rid of the ball. You know, we see that, and that irks a lot of people. The way that can happen, but that's just something you have to be prepared for. So it's just going to be a good experience, I think, for Coach Beer and the Lady Warriors, being able to play that top-notch competition. It wouldn't surprise me at all if we don't see the two 4A's. This doesn't always happen in this tournament, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if the two bigger schools end up playing each other on Thursday night with Weatherford and Tuttle. The Tuttle is awesome, too. Landry Allen, Jr., she's like 6'2", 3", already committed to OU. I mean, Tuttle's for real.
Last night was the first real – go back and look, and you'll see what I'm talking about. The first where the camera was set up, it was about three rows behind the press row, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it was actually a pretty good camera shot. I prefer it to be more in the center, so hopefully Kennedy's listening. But it was my first real up-close look at West for Hammond. She is much taller than I – really thought she was that, and she had a couple blocks last night. Holy moly, that kid's gonna be something special.
No, she's every bit of over 6 foot.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's the way. So we'll see how those semifinals go. Hammond at 4:30 today against Latta. God, I was trying to remember. It was the last game that I called last year in basketball was Latta and Merritt in the 2A area consolation final down there in Chickasha.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to remember what Latta had coming back. Man, they had multiple girls that were in that 5'11 to 6'1 range. They had three of them, if I remember right. And I feel like, golly, I feel like they were junior laden. Maybe they were seniors. I can't remember. But anyhow, like he's talking about West for Hammond, Latta had like multiples of that. So it would be interesting to see that matchup today. I do remember from that game just that they played stifling defense. I mean, stifling defense that night against Merritt. So that'll be another interesting task or an interesting challenge and matchup for the Lady Warriors tonight or this afternoon at 4:30. Elsewhere on the sporting calendar yesterday, man, we were sitting there, and all of a sudden you see that little red thing pop up on the bottom of ESPN during one of the bowl games, and it was breaking news. John Madden dies at the age of 85. What a weird twist of irony.
Yeah.
What it was Sunday when that or Saturday?
Saturday
when they had the, you know, that kind of documentary was released, and then here he is. And it wasn't, from everything I can tell, it was unexpected. Not like he'd been sick and just holding on and that kind of thing. I mean, unexpected death, but he dies at the age of 85. Just one of those guys, like, for when we grew up, we think of him, or at least I think of him, as two things. One, the commentator, and two, the guy that has the football game on Sega or PlayStation or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's hard to... Well, we weren't even alive when he was coaching, quite honestly.
No,
it's been that one. But he was a fantastic coach to start it all off with. But John Madden dead at the age of 85. One of those, it's just that his last name, like Madden. I mean, it's just one of those, as soon as you hear it, you know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. You know, there are kids, I'll hear it now, they'll think of the video game. When I hear it, I think of Sunday afternoons, evenings, big game football, and it was him and Summerall. When you heard those two together, you knew you were watching a big NFL game. That's the one thing I heard over and over last night when describing Madden. And it's true. That you know, you can hear these guys this morning talk about this on the drive in about, you know, what voices in sports kind of stick with you, and Madden is at, if not the on top of the list, he's up there on the list. But I'm glad that he went into the Hall of Fame as a coach and not as a commentator. He was a great commentator, don't get me wrong, and that's what a lot of people will remember him for, but I'm glad that he went in as a coach because he basically won a Super Bowl with a team of nobodies in Oakland. And he'll tell you that straight up, or he would have. But, yeah, he'd be missed. That's a big loss for football. But, man, what a life. And that, did you see that documentary?
No, I did not. One of my buddies asked me if I saw it, and I was like, no. And he actually sent me the re-air date. I think it was coming up 8 o'clock maybe on Saturday. Let me look back. Oh, maybe it was last night at 8 that they were putting back. They were re-airing it on FS1. Mm-hmm. So I need to catch that. Hopefully maybe it's recorded and I can go back, you know, through the streaming or what have you. But
it's a great, great documentary.
Yeah, I mean,
I missed like the first 30 minutes of it. But I caught the majority of it on Saturday. It was really well done. It's just so ironic that was funny too. Not funny, ironic is the word. Watching that, my wife said, "Did he pass away? Is that why they're doing this?" Like, no, he's alive. He's alive. You just don't hear him. He's just not in the media anymore. He's retired, but he's alive. And then last night happened. How weird is that? But it was a great documentary. I really recommend it.
And his style was, as a broadcaster, his style was very unique, you know. And I was listening on the way in, and they were playing a clip of John Madden on the morning guys, and it was him describing, and it's that iconic moment where Nate Newton is on the Dallas Cowboys sidelines, and it's in the cold, and the steam is rising above off his head, and he's explaining. Excuse me. He's explaining, you know, if you want to release that hot air, you just take off your helmet and just, you know. And then he says, "We could probably barbecue on top of his head."
Yeah.
I mean, it just all kinds of. It was just funny. I mean, that's just his style was that way. So,
pioneered the what do you call it? Where he would write on the screen.
The telestrator.
He was one of the first to use that. Now everybody uses it. And things that they were talking at the morning animals when they were talking about them when I was driving in this morning is things that had been in my head too. And so I'm just repeating what I think everybody thinks is that the way his broadcast style was perfect because he had a love for the game and he wasn't overcomplicated with how he broke down something, if that makes sense, you know, and how he would describe something that happened. He'd keep it simple and you could hear that. He had a love for the game, and he made the game so much fun to watch. I mean, so much fun to watch. When you heard that he was on the broadcast, I wish we got one more Super Bowl with him. Part of me wishes we had one more with him. So, but he will be missed. He will be missed in the football world, not just the broadcast world, but the football world is going to miss him.
Yeah, and interesting note about him, he never flew.
Yeah, You always
can fly anywhere.
Yeah, the Madden bus, yeah.
He's terrified of flying.
Terrified of flying.
So he would always drive. Anyway.
Not a bad way to see the world.
No, absolutely not. Especially if you've got that sweet bus that he had.
He had a sweet ride.
Yes. And then even more better is if you don't have to drive that thing.
No,
and you
no.
can just hang out. It'd be a really nice way to travel.
He had one
the
driver
country.
The majority of the time. One mm-hmm. guy. And he's
awesome.
Always good with the people that he was around. He's all, that's the thing that I took from the documentary. He's just a good human being.
Bowl games last night, or yesterday, we got four of the five. You know, I talked yesterday about it feeling like it was finally bowl season because you get that all-day football feel. I mean, shoot, we got off the air, and there was a game starting, you know, with the, what was it called? Gosh, the Birmingham Bowl. Houston and Auburn was the first
right
out of the box
right.
yesterday. Man, I'm not making fun. Well, yeah, I am. But I'm serious. I mean, it's so funny to me. The SEC has started 0-4 as a conference. And, you know, it's like, oh, well, yeah, they're playing these games that they don't really care about. And the other team has more motivation. And it is so typical of the way that thing works because it's like you cannot criticize anything about it. I mean, you know, it's like Teflon. But that's not the truth. They're getting
A Democratic president.
Listen, Texas Tech is just killed Mississippi State. They killed them.
Yeah, they were never in it.
It was 10-7 at half, and you thought, okay, well, you know, Mississippi. And then they just whipped them in the second half. To the point, that's the lowest amount of points that Mississippi State and Mike Leach have scored all season long. They'd only been held under 20 once.
That's crazy.
By Alabama.
That's crazy.
49-9 lost to Bama. And then last night, Texas Tech holds them to 7. 34-7. You know, we really did, because of the way that game went, we didn't get what you wanted.
Yeah.
Which was a bunch of funny stuff from Leach after the game when he won. He was instead.
Didn't have a lot to say.
Got whipped by Tech. Tech looked really good. And, you hear, as soon as the announcement was made about Oklahoma and Texas going to the SEC, oh, yeah, well, it's just the rigors. And the things that are brought up is, well, you got to play like Mississippi State. Really? Good. You know what I mean? I mean, it just kind of, it blows up that narrative a little bit. And I get it. We're going to end up more than likely with the top two in the nation playing each other from that conference. I totally get it. But that's also the point a whole bunch of us have been making all these years, is that, sure, you'll have an Auburn pop up every now and then, and a Florida. And Georgia's kind of a pop-up team right now. But the truth of the matter is, throughout a lot of this run, everybody's just been riding Alabama's coattails, okay? I mean, there's a difference between talking about the SEC's success and Alabama's success. I'm not going to say one disparaging, whatever word, because Alabama has been on the greatest run we've ever seen in college football. When you throw everything in, with the modernization of it, the actual having to play to win a championship instead of the bowl system, where a lot of times those teams never even played at the end, so you're having to beat. For a while, it was number two. Now they're making them win two games, and they're still doing it a majority of the time. I'm not going to say anything about Alabama. You say whatever you want to, and I'll go, yep, that's right. But that doesn't mean the rest of the conference is Alabama, and it's not. That's the whole point of it. It's not. You know, and get, sure, you can point to, oh, well, look at all these schools that have won. That's right, but look at what they did. LSU won 2 years ago, and they can't even
They can't repeat it.
They can't repeat it.
They can't sustain it.
That's right. Bama is the only one doing that.
You know, Florida maybe was able to sustain it for a little bit, but not like to the level what Bama's doing now.
Well, nobody's ever done it like Bama's doing, but they don't. I mean, even look around the country. You know, Oklahoma's been one of the better teams. Ohio State's been one of the better teams, even Clemson this year. They've been on a pretty good run themselves. And they went 9-3 and nowhere near the playoff discussion. But there's never been a year where Bama wasn't. Even if they didn't make it, they're always right there. and Iron Bowl went away. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's always right there.
That's why but it's not everybody. The Iron Bowl, we were thinking, man, could this be the year? Could this be one of those years they can get knocked out? But yeah, it's Alabama and everybody, and that means everybody, even outside the SEC.
Outside the conference. That's right.
Yeah, it's a, and that's but that's what excited me as an OU fan of getting into the SEC is iron sharpens iron. And so the idea of playing in that conference with Alabama, and you saw how that has helped at times other like LSU or Florida or Georgia right now, you know, you would think that or you would hope that you got to get better to compete with Alabama. That's the bottom line. So, and that's what how Alabama benefits the SEC. They make other teams have to be better to compete with them. Because then maybe one year you're able to break through and bust that barrier and win a title and then hope upon hope that you can continue that, which usually doesn't happen, like LSU and others. So, Auburn. So, that's what excites me about going to the SEC. And the big question is, when will it stop? Will it stop when Saban calls it quits? Or will they just keep it going with someone else?
I thought you were asking when the SEC losing streak is going to stop.
No. When
I don't think it's going to stop in the first game. Although, I don't know. South Carolina's got some interesting momentum trying to be built with under Beamer against UNC. Oh, it's impossible to know. I mean, right now it doesn't look like anything can derail that. Even Saban leaving. The way he's got everything in place. But who knows? I mean, there also is... obviously, he's as good a coach, if not the best coach, that's ever done it. So you would think there would have to be a little bit of a drop-off. If there's not, if it just keeps on rolling, does Saban lose a little credit? In that, well, hell, anybody can do this.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean?
Well, does he get all the credit for building this empire?
To where it can't be demolished?
Right. I mean, did he build a Jenga tower or did he build a pyramid that's going to be hard to knock over?
I'm sure the result is somewhere in the middle of those two things.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you think that if he leaves, when he leaves, when he calls it quits, that there would be bigger cracks than usual? You're going to see recruits go, wait a minute, we saw it right here. We see recruits commit to the coach, not the school. If he goes and other recruits go, well, if it's not Saban I'm playing for, then I'm not going there.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think that's right.
It's the program.
I do.
I think Saban?
I think it's the program that he has there. I really do. And part of that's him, obviously.
It's an interesting discussion. Is it the coach or the program? And I'm not just Saban in Alabama, but others. You know, is it? I mean, that's what.
Well,
Stoops immediately tried to say, "Is like this is a program place, not a coach place."
Well, and that's what separates five schools from everybody else in college football, and always has.
Yeah,
is the ability for it to be not just a coach; it is the program. And all these, there's a bunch of these that want to pop up and act like they're something that they're not. There's five that have stood the test of time and always will. Now, that doesn't mean they can't have down periods, but the truth is there's five that always come back: USC, Oklahoma, Alabama, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. Period. End of discussion. No one else is in that category. They're just not. They never have been, and they never will be what those five have been and always are. Always are. And I know you're yelling at the radio right now, well, what about USC? They just went for it. Okay, well, what about in 2 years when they win it all? See? Came back. Yelling at the radio in 1998, too. Oklahoma doesn't belong in there. They've had six straight losing seasons. Oh, yeah, what about the national title 2 years ago? Because they always come back. And it's because it's about the program and the history and the tradition that those five have that are unmatched in college football history. And that's just the way it is. Sorry about your luck, Clemson or LSU or Florida or whoever you want to try to throw in there. They don't belong with the rest of those.
Yep.
And it's been proven since 1936.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll talk about one of those next. Alamo Bowl game. much confidence you have that's really going to get played. After UCLA yesterday, 2 hours before kickoff. Wonder how the band felt about that. Let's take a look at the updated standings in the Western Oklahoma Realty Bowl Mania. I didn't have a very good day yesterday, so I'm afraid. Oh, no. I stayed in second. Everybody else must have had the same picks I had, Jared. 12-9. Oh, Hunter did good yesterday. He popped back up there to second. You've made a good comeback, Jared.
I missed one.
See, I only got one right yesterday. Thanks a lot, Auburn. Sweet defense there at the end.
Yeah, thanks, Coach Leach.
Yeah, that was a... You know, you've really got to be paying attention leading up. I'm talking about from like right now until the first game starts and scouring to see how many they lost. Like Mississippi State had like 12 guys out.
That's true,
too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
What I've done is every day I go and look and I compare the line that was set on this game when it first came out versus what the actual line is.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a huge difference, I make sure and follow that, if that makes sense. Like, for instance, Nevada, what was that? Nevada and Western Michigan 2 days ago, I think.
Yeah.
Like Monday or Tuesday. I think it was Monday. It was Monday because yesterday was Tuesday. So in our game, Western Michigan was a 6.5-point underdog, right? They're plus 6.5. But if you looked at, like, scores and odds, I shouldn't be saying this. I'm giving away one of my secrets here. But if you look at scores and odds, when the game kicked, they were like a 7.5-point favorite. So that line had moved 14 points from when the game was posted. It's because Jay Norvell left Nevada. A bunch of the players left with him to go to Colorado State. And, oh, by the way, Carson Strong, the quarterback, didn't play. So what I'm saying is it was similar to what happened in the Florida game, Florida and UCF. You had UCF in our game as an underdog, and they kicked off as the favorite. That's a little trick of the trade. And if you lose, I mean, it's not foolproof. But listen, if you're getting two touchdowns worth of value, you have to take it. And if it doesn't go the right way, you just go, oh, well, that was one of those, you know, weird results. But... And there's a couple more coming like that here throughout the rest of the thing. But it's been a good competition. It feels like everybody's doing better in the bowl mania than they did in the year-long pick'em as far as being above 500. There's a bunch more guys above. I mean, we're clear at 10. Possum got out the gate strong, and then he fell down, blew a tire, to fall under 500. No surprise there. He's always been a quick starter and kind of fader down the stretch.
Yeah, I started slow, and
you, on the other hand,
yesterday finally got above 500.
Yeah, you've started slow and came back with a vengeance.
So who are we rooting for today? Let me see here. I'm just going by my picks. All right, first game, we have the Pinstripe Bowl. By the way, I saw a great article the other day. It said, quit playing football games in baseball stadiums. Couldn't agree more. Virginia Tech, Maryland, who you got? Can we say? Because people are going to go back and switch.
Mm-mm.
You're not going to say?
Nope.
All right. Virginia Tech, Maryland. I like this game, man. Iowa State and Clemson.
Do you?
Why not?
I think it's going to be a whipping.
By Clemson?
Yep.
Man, it's crazy that Iowa State's still favored, too.
They're not.
Oh, what am I looking at here?
These don't change.
Oh, I see. They
see. This is part of my secrets that I just spilled on the over the air.
I see.
That if people want to go rush, there's a couple of games today. That being one of them. That if you look at what it's started out as, and then what it currently is as far as the line, there's a clear difference in the way the game is being bet. And like I said, it doesn't always work out that way.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get four or five and upward, and some of those games have been two touchdowns worth of value, you have to pick. Like yesterday, no matter what you thought, or no, on Monday, no matter what you thought, you had to take, well, you had to take Western Michigan, because they started as a 6.5-point underdog, and when the game kicked off, they were over a touchdown favorite. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's that you had to take that. You had to pick Western Michigan, no matter if you thought they had any chance to win the game or not. And the UCF was like that too. And there's one of those today for sure, or two today for sure that are like that. And so anyway.
Yeah, I'm checking what that would. Well, those first two are like that.
Yeah, they definitely
are. The OU one has not changed at all.
Not much. It's kind of fluctuated back and forth. I think here's the thing about the OU game. I think if you bet this game, you are a lunatic. Because who is playing for either team? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a wild. That's why it's hard for me to get excited about it. I ask about the excitement level. It's hard for me to. It'd be cool to see Bob on the sidelines, and I'm sure we'll see him on the TV screen tonight way more than most head coaches, just because of the situation and what he's done. And listen, the guy has. It's amazing what the job that he has done to right the ship, or to settle the ship that is OU football, coming off of the way it looked like it was torpedoed on that Sunday after the Bedlam game. I don't think even in the most optimistic view of an OU fan, I don't think what has actually happened, you could have come up with that much optimism at that time. The way everything just looked. In the first couple, you know, think about that Sunday afternoon at 2:00 when the news starts filtering out that Riley's gone. Fast forward another, 36 hours to Tuesday morning, and then all the different decommits, all the different, you know, the portal jumping. It felt like all the rats were scurrying off the deck. And then in comes Bob Stoops, and with one speech talking about how it's not about anybody, any one individual, it's about the program and everything. Right then, it was like the waters just kind of calmed. There's a great article on ESPN.com. Dave Wilson, I think, is the writer, about this exact subject. It's a fantastic article about the value of what he brought. And it's interesting because Tram is quoted in there and saying, listen, people always love Bob, but I think they may even love him more now than they did when he retired. And I could not agree with that sentiment anymore.
Yeah.
I think that's true. I think
they're
he's
putting flowers at a statue, for crying out loud.
Yeah, and, you know, wanting to build him another one. This one with a little beard and a tequila bottle and a cigar. But I think it just.
If Barry Switzer's the king, what's Bob Stoops going to be?
Well, it's interesting you ask that, because Barry has always been the king and always been the most beloved. But I'm not 100% sure that Stoops hasn't risen to that level, even without the two extra championships to get there in his career. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And especially if Venables takes this thing and wins a title here in the next couple of years, right? Then I think that elevates Stoops' status even more for what he's done this last month.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like more. I don't know if we get a game tonight. I mentioned it earlier with Bob Stoops. You know, towards the end of his career, I don't know if he became more conservative with everything he did, just to maintain and then get to a retirement and then call it quits. But tonight, I think we're going to see a lot more fun on the OU sideline because of him and his demeanor. Doesn't it feel like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
he's in a win-win situation.
Well, yeah, he is. I mean, it doesn't even matter. He's already done he's already done what he was brought in to do. And coaching the game will definitely just kind of be the icing on the cake and the fun part of it. And if he can figure out a way to motivate the troops, it would be some sort of vindication in very small ways for what happened in Autzen Stadium in 2006. I think it's so ironic. You know, that it is Oregon that Oklahoma's playing in Bob Stoops' only game ever again. You know what I mean? That it is that opponent with what happened back then with all that onside kick madness up in Eugene in 06. So that's pretty – so it's almost like, you know, we always say the best, you know, you can't make this stuff up. That's why sports are so great, because you can't come up with some of these storylines if you tried. And this is one of those where it's something you'd miss, right? If you were trying to write this story, you'd probably miss it being Oregon. And then in real life, it is. So what are there some young guys? There's a couple young guys that I really want to kind of see, that maybe you saw glimpses of. And I think they're almost all on the defensive side. You know, there's a couple guys in the secondary. You know, Billy Bowman started the year at the nickelback. He looked like he had some ability for sure. And then he kind of got lost in the shuffle when people started getting hurt and he had to move outside. And that didn't look to be kind of where he was the most comfortable. And the next thing you know, he was banished to the bench. You know, there's still – I know Pat Fields will be there and I know Turnell will be there, but there's still a couple of young safeties. You know, Bryson Washington is a guy that everyone was excited. I mean, a high recruit that hasn't been able to make any sort of mark on the field. So there's some of those guys. I think Downs on the line is a guy that'll be fun. Stutzman, the linebacker, we saw little glimpses of here and there. Now without Asamoah, how much more is that going to increase him, his level or his amount of snaps out there tonight? So, you know, those guys, I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see some of those guys and maybe what the future of Oklahoma defensively might be, you know, in an old scheme that's not going to maybe necessarily look like what Venables is going to teach them from now until September, but maybe seeing some faces and some numbers out there that you're not used to seeing and what that potential could be.
Yeah, it's kind of what these bowl games have turned into when they're not college football playoff bowl games, is – a glimpse into the future for both schools. And I'm with you. I'm looking on the defensive side. I mean, we're going to get Caleb Williams. We know what we got there. We're going to get Mims. We know what we got there. But on the defensive side, we've saw some of these guys plugged in throughout the season. But I think we're going to see someone like Ethan Downs and Stutzman get a lot of snaps. And that's going to give us a good idea of what we can see in the future with those guys.
Yeah,
that's something I'm really going to be keying in on, is on the defensive side.
I think Reggie Grimes is another guy,
yeah,
that you saw glimpses, but, you know, with all, let's see, it's what, Thomas, Benito, Perrion Winfrey, all out. I mean, all opting out of the game to get ready for the draft. You know, that's the defensive line that you saw most of the time out there. So, obviously, you're going to have to fill those in with some guys, and these young guys will get the chance. Offensively, you know, I think it'd be interesting to see what Cale does, just because he's never had the chance to call plays.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any difference for next year, but it'll be interesting to see what you try to do and maybe how you try to use some guys. I mean, I know one guy that I felt like didn't get the ball near enough throughout the season was Mario Williams. You know, he just looks so electric with the ball in his hands, and not finding ways to get him the ball. Obviously, Mims was kind of up and down. Felt like when OU's offense really played well, Marvin Mims was involved. And when it didn't, it kind of struggled. We had a hard time getting him the ball, right? I mean, it just always felt like that. So, and then another guy that it was a big deal when he got eligible and then never really saw much of him. How much of Marcus Major do you see? And how much does that impact the future if Kennedy Brooks decides to move on to the NFL? You know, that's another guy that, you know, glimpses, obviously in the Cotton Bowl last year, both against Texas and then in the actual Cotton Bowl. We saw glimpses of what maybe he could do, and then there he wasn't there all year long. So I think that more than anything is what is intriguing, but I'm still not going to get my hopes up that the game's going to get played until we actually see somebody kick it off.
All right, I just scoured Gene Twitter. I haven't seen any rumors or anything, have you?
Well, just what was it, Monday, some of the Oregon folks covering the game were talking about how, you know, they started with 88 scholarship players, 31 of those missing down at when they were watching the bowl practice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's getting pretty low number wise.
With no explanation, were they there, like in San Antonio?
No, no. They weren't at practice.
They didn't.
Because they're on the list. Didn't come.
I see.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not, they're in Eugene. They didn't even
That's
come.
Right. Yeah, they're not there.
No.
And so that's where you kind of go, whoa. you start doing little gazintas, that doesn't leave very many. Now, I guess, you know, the UCLA thing was because they said they didn't have, you know, the defensive line got wiped out. So they really didn't have, you know, a whole position group. Maybe it's been kind of fluid throughout the team there at Oregon versus concentrated in one room.
I see.
Yeah.
So there's depth will take over or, you know, fill in spots, but then there's nothing behind them. But
well, and like yesterday, according to UCLA, they had literally two defensive linemen that could play in the game. Well, that ain't enough. No, you
well,
know what
no,
I mean?
No, yeah.
I mean, that ain't enough. Now, we can argue whether or not the ones that weren't there knew anything was wrong with them. But that's another topic.
The topic is, are the rules too strict?
You think?
Is it just because of contact tracing?
We got,
or is it because
we got 2020 rules in a 2022 world.
Exactly.
It's changed. Guess what? NCAA hadn't. Yep. That's not a shocker. Man, this is our third to last segment of the year, Jared.
That's true.
So when I start thinking about that, I start thinking about the year in sports that we've had in the year 2021. What are some of your favorite moments from the last year in sports?
Great question. It just seems like it's harder to find because of such a weird year in sports. I will start with Elk City football and that incredible playoff run they had, incredible season they had. After what seemed to be loss after loss after loss the 3 years prior. And then this year happened. Making the road trip to Grove, shutting down one of the state's, if not the state's, best running back, and coming out of that with a win and getting to the semifinals for the first time in, help me,
2004.
So that's one of my highlights this year, would be the Big Elk football and their season as a whole, but in particular that game. How fun that game was, how they came out and just knocked them in the teeth and said, we're one of the top four in the state, and we're going to come to your place, we're going to take it, and we're gonna prove it. That's one of mine.
Yeah, I got that one on my list too. Best season since 98. I think with the way that everything happened, the way that they, you know, the what had happened before, a couple of years before, and for those guys to stick with it and end up playing in the state semifinals and playing Clinton closer than anybody else did in the playoffs. It wasn't even a question that was the toughest game that the Red Tornadoes played in the playoffs. You know, yeah, that was an awesome deal. And Clinton winning number 17, becoming the only school in the state to win a title in seven straight decades. That's an amazing accomplishment for that program. It's always been around. But, yeah, I had those two. One that's a little bit further back, and I'd almost kind of forgot about it till I started looking for end-of-year stuff. The Hydro Double.
Yeah, that was fun.
That, you know, you remember walking out of the – I was already on the road listening to you guys and that amazing comeback that the Bobcats had against the defending champions in Garber, a team that – I mean, I was driving home – listening to that last quarter and thinking, man, this is a tough break for Hydro Weekly because Garber's up 7 or 8 starting the fourth quarter. That is the last team in the state of Oklahoma you want to be behind because of the way that they play.
Mm-hmm.
And for Hydro Weekly, that fourth quarter comeback was just awesome to cap the night with the Lady Bobcats starting that championship Saturday with a win over Van Noss, and it was one of those – you know, there's certain times in the Big House over the years that you see a team that's a very good team. Matter of fact, this one was a defending state championship team, but they were able to kind of have the disrespect chip on their shoulder, right? Because Van Noss had been number one all year long. And they're looking around going, wait a minute. We played for the title 2 years ago. We won the title last year. And we got to be number two. Watch this. And they blew them away.
Right.
You know, I'll never forget that night years back Okarchi was Class B state champs the year before, and they were number two to Cheyenne Raiden all year long. And I was on the floor with the coaches' interviews before the game, and Coach Myers, Sherry Myers, I asked that question. You know, is there some sort of motivation here? And the look on her face and the twinkle in her eye, she just says, yes. And they beat him by 50. I mean, it was just a rout. You know,
yeah.
She had those girls ready for that game. Anyway, but that's what an amazing weekend that was for that school. And now here you look up and they're both number one again right now. Be hard to replicate that just because it's hard to win in that building three times. But that was cool to me, you know, for that to happen. And, oh, by the way, it wasn't really a double. It was a quadruple because they both won the state title on the basketball floor, and they both won the academic state titles in Class A as well.
And you know how they had that three-point shooting contest?
And then they won that too.
Yeah. They had representatives, both boys and girls, winning that one too. It was a perfect night for Hydro, a perfect day. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. More on a statewide level, can't talk about this year without that OU-Texas game. I mean, that's one's go down for the ages, right?
Yeah, I think
come back, how it ended, how crazy it was, how loud that place got on one side of the stadium. Now it got loud on the other side of the stadium at times, early in the block punt and stuff like that. I mean, that game had everything, everything.
I think more, not only that, just the year, like the craziness that was the OU football season.
Yeah.
With the expectation starting out, you know, right then when, you know, the preseason Heisman favorite gets benched for a true freshman and never gets his job back. You know, the unevenness of it all. And then the way, obviously, it ended in Stillwater, and then an era ended the very next day. And then, of course, Oklahoma State on the other end of that. They were the exact opposite of the topsy-turvy OU season, was just that steady Eddie defense wins games throughout the entire season for Oklahoma State, and then coming up just that, golly, 2 inches short of what a Big 12 title, and then, you know, possibly a berth into the playoff. With the way things worked out, maybe not. I mean, I think it's pretty easy to say maybe not with the way that Alabama beat Georgia, but still, couldn't have been two more different seasons.
Yeah.
That ended up kind of the same. You know, at the end of the day, both ended up just a tick, well, for OU, massively disappointing. But then for Oklahoma State, you know, maybe not expecting that season, but then once you got there, pretty disappointing not to go ahead and win it, win the Big 12 title. Another one here locally that I was one of my very favorites was back in May, our guy Trace Hill winning the individual state title on the golf course for the Big Elks. And then as he continued through the summer, he won that. Then he won the state AM. One of the just an awesome run through you know, May through to July or whatever it was.
Yeah.
For him to win those tournaments, the boys not quite getting there and breaking that streak of what's now been way too long of 11 years straight without a team title here on the golf course for the Big Elks. But that was cool. I mean, the way that, you know, that team played, and then Trace being able to come back. I think he was what? God, three shots behind with five holes to play or something like that, and reeled in William Sides to beat him on the last hole. That was cool.
To do it not in not-so-good conditions.
Yeah, no, it was right about that.
Seasons, talk about seasons overall. I go back to OU softball and then get to the World Series and losing that opening game and coming back through the loser's bracket and still got beat in the championship series in the first game. Was on the brink of losing that second game and came back and won. I mean, that was fun for me personally, because my oldest kid really starting to focus in on softball, and she knows the sport, so to watch it with her and me and her get excited at the same time, that was special for me. So but to see, you know, your state team do it, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, I got a couple OU Texas ones too.
That's up
on the text
people,
line.
Yeah,
here Sammy, been going for 20 years, never heard the Cotton Bowl so loud.
Yeah,
as it was. It's funny you mentioned your daughter, because I have another one written down here that's more that speed Gosh, you know this. In the softball, you would know them, so I didn't write them down. Who all? There was a bunch of teams from out here that were in state tournaments.
Oh my goodness! Of all ages in the summer.
Yeah.
Well, my kids' team went over the Tulsa area, Preston.
There was Elk City teams. There was Canute teams. There's Cheyenne teams.
Canute teams. There's a couple there. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Elk City went. I know that 8U team went. Navajo produced one at that 8U level. If we have a listener, I'm sure he's listening, will tell us at the older level. There was other teams over there in the Weatherford tournament that just didn't materialize for some. I mean, that's another conversation. But, yeah, I mean, that's something we talked about back then and we always talk about is that we see the – future of Western Oklahoma, not just softball, but of athletics. When you see teams like that, not in softball and baseball, you know, you see a bunch of representation, and that's always fun for me to get excited about. Man, what's coming up is going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, Crushers. They were state runner up, and then to think, just from a personal level, you know, you've got our little guys where. A run away from beating them out in regionals. Yeah. You know, then you're like, what? Are we that good? I don't know if we're that good. And then they got all the way, played for the state title. That was cool for those young guys.
For me personally.
I have another text line one, but I'm not saying it.
I didn't see
it. It's not on that text line.
Oh.
Oh, no, I'm actually shocked we haven't got more of this one, especially from the orange-tinted side of the rivalry. But the last bedlam that's going to be played in Stillwater, more than likely, at least for a while, I think you could pretty comfortably say that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems more and more that OU is going to be in the Big 12 next season. But as each you expect them to leave before 24, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I would be shocked if this isn't the last
Big 12. 23, that's right. Think so. I'd be shocked. So, yeah, at least it felt like a year of the return of sports.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Return of more
2020
normalcy.
2020 was, yeah, we got a little bit more normal. Now it seems like we're going in opposite direction. And I think there's more of an outcry that we got to stop this from what I've seen from both sides when we get political here. But it seems like we're getting more of an outcry like we've got to learn to live with this, and we got to stop this because we are, and I said it yesterday, and I'll say it again. There are, and this is what is sad. There are players who are never going to play another down of football who thought they were about to play yesterday in that Holiday Bowl.
Think about NC State for just a second.
It's a cross-country trip.
Yeah, okay, but that's not all. Remember back at Omaha? When they had a team in the College World Series that got knocked out.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
This has been a horrible year to be an NC State fan.
Yeah.
Horrible year.
Oh, man. I saw a player tweet. I have family, friends, bought tickets, plane tickets, hotel stays to get here, and now this happens. NCAA needs to loosen up.
Well, they got to figure something out. I mean, it's silly. And hopefully...
Like the big leagues are trying to be progressive with it, with their rules.
We'll talk about this more tomorrow. But what we're hoping for in the new year of sports.
Okay.
And I think that'll be at the top of almost everyone's list.
Yeah.
Everyone have a great Wednesday. Hammond at 4:30 on Paragon TV.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.